There we go. We're official. Welcome, everybody. Good morning. Let's take a moment, as we usually do on Sunday mornings, to just take a minute to get quiet, get grounded, get in tune with your sense of willingness. Openness. Know that you will learn whatever it is you intend to learn this morning, even if that comes about on an unconscious level. Know that our minds and hearts are joined with all of those other beings who are both consciously and unconsciously working on their evolution, stretching our capacity for unconditional love. Deep breath. You can open your eyes when you're ready. And we say, welcome again. I was reminded as we were doing our little grounding and centering exercise years and years ago. That's probably about, I guess, 10 or 11. And there was a, we lived right across the street from our church. And so, very closely related to that building and the people in it. There was a, one of my favorite priests there was named Father Quinn, Michael Quinn. He was a big, beefy Irishman, red face, probably an alcoholic. And I used to go and see him every once in a while. And I remember one time, he invited me in to sit down at his desk, and he had one of his great big old polished desks, and I was on the other side, and he said, "Jerry, do you pray?" And I said, "Oh, of course I do, Father. I, in fact, I hop into church every once in a while, sometimes when I just almost pass it up and just get in one of the lower pews and say a Hail Mary and Our Father." He said, "Oh, that's good, that's good." He said, "The next time you go to church, next time you go into church, Catholic churches were open all the time back then. Next time you go in church," he said, "what I want you to do is I want you to sit there and get real quiet." That's all he said. "I want you to sit there and get real quiet." Never forgot that. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about at first. You know, a 10 or 11-year-old is not going to connect with that. But later on in life, I began to understand what he was really talking. Get real quiet. Never forgot that. Stayed with me. Reminded me of that again this morning. As we do, get real quiet. And you don't force that to happen. You don't beat the crap out of your thinking mind because it's yakking all the time. It's not about getting into a fight with that. It's about saying, "Oh, there's my mind chattering away, doing what it's normally going to do. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to leave talking teeth that I wind up. I'm going to leave it over here and I'm going to move down the hallway a little bit. It's still going to be yakking, but it's not going to be interfering with my process. I'm not going to get so upset or disturbed because it's just my mind's just doing what it does." So it's rather a misnomer in a lot of meditation textbooks. They will talk about quieting the mind. And I just have to give you my impression of that. My impression of that is that ain't going to happen. Your mind's always going to do what your mind does. But what you can do is you can disassociate yourself from the yak of the yak in the mind, and just sort of move. The way I describe it is move down the hallway a little bit. So the teeth are still talking down here someplace, but you're in a quieter space. You might be listening in a little, you might still be able to hear the yak of the yak of the yak of the yak, but it's not interfering with my process in this particular moment. Next time you go into church, get real quiet. Next time you show up on Sunday morning, get real quiet. Of course, you have to tell me that too. So I'm going to break the rule by getting a little bit noisy. But I think you'll see how this fits in today's lesson. It usually does. From page 21. Right around the middle of the page. And again, if you don't have a book, it's okay. We read it out loud and then we comment on it. The book we are using, if you happen to be new here, is called The Book of Innocence. And that's a marvelous title. Because that's really what we are about, is to realize that nothing has interfered with our original innocence. Matthew Fox called it, instead of original sin, called it original blessing. Nothing has interfered with that. We think it has. We think we've lost it somewhere along the way, but we haven't. We have not lost our precious innocence. It's still there. We might have misplaced it every once in a while, but it's still there. So right around the middle of the page, page 21. Some of you say to us, "Well, I want to know everything. Let me know all things." That is an expression of my ego consciousness. My ego wants to know. I want to know everything. And the reason why I want to know everything is I want to know when this is going to be done. The ego consciousness is the original, "Are we there yet?" Because it figures that, what, I want to be finished with this. Can I be done with this work? And then I can lay back in a hammock and sip lemonade, right? Because then my work is over. It doesn't realize that the work, if you want to call it that, is continuing. It's never finished. Your capacity, my capacity, your capacity for unconditional love is constantly stretching, constantly growing. God is not a kind of like a monolith sitting, like a rock sitting in the middle of a field. That doesn't change. I remember in Baltimore Catechism, God always was, always will be, and always remains the same. Remember that one? Well, I have to disagree with that. Because I do believe that since we are extensions of God consciousness, we grow and we change and we stretch and we become. And that is a continual process. It is a never-ending process. And that seems overwhelming and exhausting to my ego consciousness, but it's not my ego consciousness we're talking about. We're talking about your divine consciousness, the aspect of you that is aligned to God, to the oneness, to unity, whatever words you want to use for that. So when you say something to the effect of, "I want to know everything, let me know all things," I want to know, it's my ego saying, "When is this going to be done? I'm tired." Whereas my mind, my divine consciousness says, "I'm stretching, I'm growing, I'm becoming more and more aligned to the essence of unconditional love, and I can't wait to learn a little bit more, and a little bit more, a little bit more." Who is it? Joe Namath years ago, the quarterback for the New York Jets, said something to the effect of, "I can't wait until tomorrow because I get better looking every day." Done.
Do we ever go backwards?
That's a good question. Do we ever go backwards?
Who's correct?
Well, no, there is that phrase we talk about, two steps forward, one step backwards. I used to think that was true on the spiritual path. I don't anymore. I don't think we can. I don't think it's possible to move backwards. We can get lost sometimes. We can get in forgetfulness sometimes. But I don't, even that has a purpose. Even that would be a wonderful thing to be aware of. Even my forgetfulness has a purpose. Because when I wake up again, when I become aware again, I have a choice. Do I beat myself up for falling asleep, or do I embrace, am I, or can I be grateful for waking up again? There's a purpose involved there for me. So my answer, my simple answer to that question, John, is right now in my life, I don't believe there is such a thing as a backward step. It might feel that way emotionally, but we're not talking about what it feels like emotionally. We're talking about what is. How I feel has nothing to do with the state of consciousness that my divine self is in. That's where my emotions come in, and they're not unimportant. I'm not trying to throw them away or ignore them, but they are not an indication of my spiritual awareness. You probably heard that phrase once in a while. It was floating around AA for quite a while. Or, if you feel far away from God, who moved? And I bought into that at one time or another, and then I realized, wait a minute, that's ridiculous. First of all, God doesn't move. God's everywhere and everything. So you can't get away from it. Now, I can get lost in my ego consciousness once in a while, but that doesn't take away from my spiritual state of being, because that's still there. In Romans, the book of Romans, Paul says, nothing, absolutely nothing can separate you from God's love. Not even how you feel, how you think, what you did, what you didn't do. Nothing, absolutely nothing can separate you from the love of God. Not even how you think, not even what you believe. So I come back again. Can you ever take a backward step? No, it can feel that way. You can think you did. But in reality, you cannot ungrow yourself. If you have reached a state of consciousness where you've grown and stretched as much as you possibly can in this particular moment, you can't retreat from that. It's always there. So that my opinion of that and my recognition of that might change sometime or another in the near future or the far away future, but I don't think it's going to. I don't think it's possible
Hey,
to
Jerry.
take a backward step. Yes, Jim.
Thank you for that. That was I received that. I mean, it's something I needed to hear because that's pretty sobering what you said, in that we can never go back. Once we're stretched, yes, I can forget, because my ego self would say, oh, that, you know, this path, this is too daunting. Let me just kind of retreat back to like what I know. But what you said is so gentle and so sobering, because I can always say, well, okay, well, I have stretched, I have grown. That little self wants to think that, okay, when am I ever going to finish, get past the finish line?
Am I ever going to get there? One of my teachers put it very simply. She said, you know, we have different, our souls have different classrooms that where we do our learning. For us now in this particular, this planet Earth is our classroom at the moment. And the major lesson, the major learning on classroom Earth is to learn how to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. Everyone, and obviously that's going to take more than one lifetime. At least it is for me. So I do a little bit at a time. But once I get to that point where I'm able to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love, I go to another classroom. I never stop learning. Now, I don't know what that classroom is going to look like. See, my ego wants to know, what's the next one? What's the next one look like? I haven't finished with this one yet. My ego is kind of always, my mind, my ego are always kind of one step beyond. Okay. Well, here I am, but that's where I should be. I should be over there someplace. And what the divine consciousness says, you are perfect just where you are. See, that's the paradox. You're perfect just the way you are, and you're growing at the same time. I had a great example of that when I was thinking about this one time a while ago. And I thought about my grandson Finn, who I know I talk about a lot because we've got a real, I was going to say special bond. We've got a really neat connection, to put it that way. Because what was stumping me a minute ago was, of course, in Miracles says there's no such thing as a special relationship. And I was going to say, well, I've got a special relationship with Finn. And I got a special relationship with Margot. And I got a special relationship with some other people. So who are you to tell me that? And what came to me when I was studying that years ago was I got stuck on that one. It didn't say you can't have one, but special relationships don't really exist in the spiritual world. And I was making all sorts of excuses about why they should. And I got quiet enough to listen to my heart, listen to my soul. And my soul said this, said, remember when you were walking around, it was around Christmas time, and Margot and I were up in Chicago visiting our son and daughter-in-law and their first child, Michaela. And we were walking out, it was in Chicago, cold winter day. I was carrying her, and she had one of those, sort of like a sleeping bag. It was all wrapped up in this, and I was carrying her. I could feel this heart energy just kind of coming into me. And occasionally, one of the other people would stop and say, "Do you want me to carry her?" I said, "Oh, no." I was enjoying it too much. And so the spirits came in and said, "Remember how much love you felt for her at that moment?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, that's simple. That's how you're supposed to love everybody. That's how you're supposed to love everybody." I got it. So here's me and my grandson Finn. And I'm loving him. I know I love him exactly where he is right now in his life. Not perfect, because I'm not perfect either, but I love him exactly where he is. And then the little boy said, "Well, what? He's not going to stay in that place anymore. He's going to be getting ready to go to college. He's going to be changing. Some things are going to be happening in his life. Can you love him then?" And my ego says, "Well, you either love him now or you love him later. You can't have both." And my soul says, "Of course you can have both. I can love you exactly where you are, and I can love your becoming at the same time. So it's not a matter of moving forward or moving backwards. It's a matter of stretching and growing. And once you've stretched and grown, you can't unstretch yourself. If you were to know all things, you would no longer have the experience of learning that is required of you. You'd be done. And even in the upper room, even in higher states of consciousness, in a higher state of expression, your learning ensues in somewhat different ways, but it continues. You have made many things in a lifetime. The reflection of your past creations surround you. Not just the things, but the ideas you have in your mind, your belief systems you have, the experiences you had. You are accountable to these creations, yes? And as you re-see them from a higher template of the upper room, they will be renown. In 12-step literature, there's something called the 12 promises. And one of them says, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on. In other words, the past is something that I don't condemn myself for, I don't get locked into, but something that I can continue to learn from. Because the lessons of my past are still here with me. I can wish, I can hope. I say, well, I wish I didn't do, I hadn't done that. I wish I had said that or done that differently. That's the truth. I understand that. That's the truth of my limited mind. My divine consciousness says, how can I milk this? How can I milk this a little bit more? What can I learn from this experience? Number one, one of the things I can always learn from my past experience is how to forgive myself. That's probably number one on my list. And I can do that more. I can do that more and more and more and more and more until I don't need to do it anymore. I can forgive you if I think you've wronged me again and again and again and again until there's no more energy left in that situation. I've done that with people in my life where I've felt wronged or harmed or hurt and felt anger and resentment about it, wanting to get even, or at least not wanting to forgive, wanting to make them suffer. And I've worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. And what I found out, if I'm continually working on it with, let's say, with forgiveness, for example, I continue to work on that one. There's going to come a time when I'm going to touch that old memory and there's not going to be any stuff there. It's done. It happened. I wish it didn't happen, but there's no more emotional charge to that particular event in my life. And so that whoever it was that I think caused that, I'm done with that. I'm finished with that. The reflection of your past surrounds you. You're accountable to these creations, yes. And as you re-see them from a higher template of the upper room, they will be renown. They will be renown. They will be. They will lose their emotional charge, but they can still teach you.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
I just want to go back just a tad bit because I was resonating on what you're talking about in terms of our task here on in this incarnation is to love unconditionally. And that's, again, as you said, it won't happen in just one lifetime. So my thought was when you said that, our consciousness kind of hardwired in this experience to love with conditions. Even if we say we're loving someone unconditionally, are we somehow just kind of hardwired in this experience that we put conditions on stuff, people that we know not of?
I think that what we sometimes refer to as my small self, my limited consciousness, my ego personality, is hardwired to conditional love, because that's the only thing it knows. It lives in limitation. My divine self, my divine consciousness, is hardwired, you might say. Although hardwired sounds like it's stuck, it's limited some way, but my divine consciousness is open to stretching and becoming more and more and more and more aligned with unconditional love. So I guess that's another way we can find out where I'm at right now is what how am I thinking? How am I processing this particular event in my life? And if it's filled with a lot of anger, fear, resentment, right, I can recognize that as being my lower consciousness that's stuck in the consciousness of limitation. Not a bad thing, it's just doing what comes naturally. But when I realize that this part of me is stuck in limitation, I can also realize that is not who I am. That makes sense? Okay, thanks, man.
Thank you, Jerry.
Well, I'm reminded of something else. Something Jack Poole introduced me to years and years ago that kind of fits with this whole realm here. It's a form of healing that came from the Hawaiian spiritual tradition called Ho'oponopono. And it was refound or reinvented by a psychiatrist Hugh Lin, I believe his name was, who was a doctor, a psychiatrist, who lived in Hawaii and was given a job to be the chief medical advisor to this prison for the criminally insane. They took on this job with no idea, I don't think, about what was going to happen. He came across this method of healing, which had to do with just a real simple approach to life, to make into his mantra, to make his what he said to himself, how he spoke to himself, spoke to those around him. These particular phrases: I love you. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Thank you. Whatever order you want to put those in. And what he did in his job as chief psychiatrist for the criminally insane in this mental hospital was he would walk up and down the corridors every day, spend the whole day walking up and down the corridors, repeating that message. I love you. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Thank you. A marvelous thing happened after about 6 months. The hospital started emptying itself out. People started getting well. They started taking responsibility for what they did. Or they kind of graduated to another realm of healing. I love you. Sorry. Forgive me. Thank you. Just a reminder from Jack Poole. Thank you, Jack.
Jerry.
Yes.
Television series.
Really? Okay.
Yesterday, women's.
There it is again. Wow. Yeah, you can check it out online. There's a whole lot of information about it. It's called Ho'oponopono. And that's just a kind of a brief indication.
As it was using that to address our political leaders to use that prayer.
Wow.
And we talked about maybe using the group as a group consciousness using that.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Oh, I wanted to thank you for something else too. A couple of weeks ago, we had a translation of piece of translation from the New Testament that was different from. And you had checked it out online. I think was it Peterson was the name?
The what?
Peterson, the name of the guy who made this translation. Okay. Anyway, I went out and bought the Bible. It's
Was that see the guy's name up there that asked the
Oh,
question?
Greg.
Greg.
Yeah.
Greg asked the
Yes. Yeah.
question. I went into
There you are,
town.
Greg. Yes. Thank you, Greg.
The Message by Eugene Peterson. Yes.
Yeah, the translation is called The Message. And I started reading it from cover to cover. It's really interesting. Some of the phraseology that they use. It's quite a bit different from what we're used to. Right? So I appreciate that. Thank you, Laura, for checking that out for us. And
Hey,
thank you, Greg, for reminding us.
Jerry, right quick. So, but Ho'oponopono, you can download that. You can put that in your app because I have it on my app. I have it on my phone, and there's a meditative part to it. There's some music to it, and if you're in a bind or a situation, you can just like open that and just kind of just let that resonate with you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jim. It's all over the place. So, no, essentially what we can do is, do I want to focus on that? That this prayer, this mantra is all over the place. People are discovering it every day. Or do I want to focus on what I see in the news? Which one's the real world? And that's the choice we make. Just the real. And it's not about ignoring the craziness or the insanity that's going on in outside. in Gaza or in other places in the world. I'm not saying, oh, that's not true, that's just an illusion. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, where is my focus? What am I focusing on as being the truth with a capital T? And I honestly believe that changes the world. One of our favorite modern day saints called Peace Pilgrim said this very simply. When enough people reach a state of inner peace, there will be no more war. And I believe that's true. If it's happening in, if it's happening out there, it's happening in here. And when I have reached a state or a number, the 100th monkey, when the 100th monkey has reached the state of awareness of peacefulness, there will be no more war. I truly believe that's true. But if I keep believing in war is inevitable, if I keep believing that in terms of instead of believing in the power of, let's say, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. If I believe the power of war is more essential and more powerful than that, then it's going to be. If I believe that that little mantra can change the world, or at least it can change myself for a sec, even for a split second, that might be enough. Now, if you understand that everything in manifestation is in energy and concretized by thought, named and held in solidity by all who have agreed to the name, that's an institution we call a bank. That is something of nature and we call an ocean or a tree. When you understand that these things are all in tone, a vibration, in oscillation, your lifting of the self to the upper room claims your agreement to what you see in the higher octave of your experience. All things are made new. It is the act of recognition of the source of all things demonstrated by one who knows who he is, what she is, how she serves. There's a place outside of San Francisco called Muir Woods. And it's almost like what I call, it's almost like an outdoor chapel. It's a sacred space. And I can remember visiting there a couple of times. And I could say, well, okay, well, that's it's a little piece of forest, a little piece of redwood, sequoias, nice. So much more than that. It's undefinable. You walk into that space, and it's not. On one level, it's a bunch of trees, okay? A bunch of really old trees. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, this is such a sacred space, such a space that is indefinably sacred. I couldn't tell you why, but I just know that that's true. That's what it's talking about here. It's either a bunch of woods, a bunch of trees, or it's a sacred space. Nothing's changed except what's going on in here. Course in Miracles says, how could I see this differently? Whatever it is. So I watched the news. How could I see this differently? I could focus on the horror, the difficulty, the pain, the anguish. Or I could focus on, what else could I focus on? The beauty, the possible. You know, in the Catholic school shooting a couple of days ago, one of the most marvelous events that happened there was one of these little kids jumped on top of his friend and took a bullet for him without thinking. Would I have that courage? What a blessing. A miracle. Would I have that courage? I don't think so. See, then I need to turn that around a little bit more and say, not I wish I had that courage. I do have that courage. It hasn't expressed itself yet. I am open to being a channel of love. I love you. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Thank you. Can I say that to the people in Gaza? Can I say that to the Israeli soldiers? To Putin? I love you. I'm sorry for judging you. I'm sorry for thinking that you were the disguise you're wearing and not the truth of who you are. Forgive me. Thank you. Each of you before us says these words. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve. In a slight comprehension of what they truly mean and signify. I know who I am. Do you really? And even if you do, how much of a day is spent in knowing who you are, or getting lost in who you think you are, or somebody else thinks you are? How much time is spent sometimes in thinking about what you think somebody else is thinking about you? Here I am thinking about what I think somebody else might be thinking about me. I'm 5 steps removed from reality. Here I am in traffic. I'm wanting to make a left-hand turn, but there's a lot of cars coming my way, and I can see the cars behind me building up. And so I start thinking about what the people in the cars behind me are thinking about me. What am I thinking that? What am I thinking? And the way Marianne Williamson put it so beautifully is, what am I thinking that God is not thinking? Slight comprehension of what they truly mean and signify. If you understood only one of those phrases in full realization, the consciousness you hold would be completely transformed. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve. One moment, one person can be, Course in Miracles says, can be the salvation of the world. If you understood only one of those phrases in full realization, the consciousness you hold would be completely transformed. But you learn what the meaning is experientially as you hold on to it. To understand and realize the claim, I know who I am in truth, would qualify you for sainthood by your own admission. And that is not the purpose here. When one truly knows who he knows who all others are and loves them because he cannot not love them. When I know who I am, I also know who you are. Can't be any different. When I don't know who I am, don't know who you are either. So we're going to take a few minutes to let that sink in. I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. We'll return to that last paragraph next week. That's going to be our jumping off point. I'm going to suggest you find your just get comfortable in your spot wherever you happen to be. Close your eyes, take a couple of breaths. And just breathe deeply for a moment or so, a little bit deeper than you might normally breathe. Kind of stretching. Allow yourself to get in touch with the rhythm of your breathing. The rhythm of your heartbeat. And allow yourself to settle, soften. And let us begin with that first phrase, I know who I am. I am a divine child of God, unconditionally loved. I know who I am. And that means that I see everyone and everything through the eyes of the Christ, where there is no dualism, there's no judgment, there's no conflict. I see through whatever disguise you have invented for yourself this time around, and know that your disguise, your ego, your personality is not who you are. This has nothing to do with me loving your personality or loving your disguise or loving your mask. It has to do with loving who you are. I know who I am. And when I know who I am, I know who you are. And there is no one and nothing left out of the circle. There is no one and nothing left outside the circle. So when I discover myself judging you or judging myself, I realize I am mistaken. I've gotten lost in personality or ego consciousness. And I let that go. And I forgive myself for forgetting. And I say these words to myself. I love you. I'm sorry for judging you, for putting you in the dark. Forgive me. Thank you. And let the energy of those words wash over you, cleansing, healing. And you can allow these words to resonate within you. You can say them to yourself if you want to, or just let them wash over you. I am whole. I am filled with light. I am perfect. I am filled with light. I am surrounded by the pure white light of Christ. Nothing but good shall come to me. Nothing but good shall flow from me. I give thanks. I give thanks. I give thanks. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. You can open your eyes when you're ready.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you for your continued generosity for this program to keep it going. And thank you for being here on Sunday morning. And thank you just for being here with me, for me, and for one another. Hope Thanks. You have a great week, guys.
Great.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Take care.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Love Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.